The Adulting with ADHD podcast is not a substitute for medical advice. Please see a medical professional if you think you have ADHD or if you have questions about your current treatment. To support this podcast or to access the podcast archives, visit patreon.com/adultingwithADHD. This is the Adulting with ADHD podcast, self-empowerment for people with ADHD.
Today, I'm very excited to have with me Anna Grunseth. Anna is a trans woman with ADHD based out of Green Bay, Wisconsin, and she agreed to be on the show today to answer a lot of questions we've been having among listeners. Welcome, Anna. I guess just jumping in, just for context, we've been doing a lot of episodes lately on hormones, and I've been getting a lot of outreach and a lot of questions about, so this is all great information. How does the trans community, or if you're in the middle of a transition, do I need to keep anything in mind? So that's where I'm coming from with the questions. Do you want to start with sharing with us your story a little bit about your transition and ADHD?
I'll start with the transition portion. I began transitioning 8-ish years ago, back in 2013 at age 32. It was actually kind of a long time coming, as with a lot of people. I had various feelings that related to gender, but I didn't really have ways of putting it into words or describing my experiences. That was a time in my life when I was learning more about differences between gender, sexuality, presentation, gender identity, trans identities, and becoming more comfortable with that concept as it related to myself. So for a number of years, I had privately identified as some kind of transgender. I just didn't know what to do with it or where to go with that. And after a while, it came to a point where the uncertainty and indecision of that was starting to become more uncomfortable than the idea of coming out. So I tentatively came out to a few people, and then one thing led to another. It snowballed, and suddenly I realized, oh, I'm relating to these trans communities I'm finding online, other trans people, and everything just clicked into place. So in 2013, I sought some assistance from a gender counselor. A few months later, I found a doctor. I went on hormone replacement therapy, as we're discussing today, and then proceeded with my social transition and coming out in stages. I think as is a pretty common experience for people. Thankfully, I was met with a lot of support in my life. I know that's not the case for everybody. That's not to say it was without complications, certainly. I was living in rural central Wisconsin at the time, which, although nothing terrible happened and many people surprised me with how welcoming and accepting they were, it was still a very stressful time and a very stressful environment. And this was also just before the transgender tipping point that occurred in the wider media landscape and the wider awareness. And there was even more educating to be done, and I had a lot of self-advocacy to do. And thankfully, I found some good allies to take up that mantle over the years and work with me on that.
So when do you, this is a side question, when do you?
I want to say it was sometime around 2014 or so, if memory serves. I remember there was, of course, that title on, I believe it was Time magazine, with Laverne Cox on the cover, and then Caitlyn Jenner's public coming out and media coverage of that. And then you started seeing more trans representation in media that was good representation. For example, we had Laverne Cox on Orange is the New Black, but we also had people like Jen Richards doing things like Her Story and acting in other shows, and people like Trace Lizette and Angelica Ross starting to appear. And then a few years later, we have the show Pose, which is absolutely extraordinary in terms of both representation and the acting and the actors. I'm just constantly in awe of them. So that's what I think of, especially.
Great. So let's go back to you. I took a note here that you talked to a gender counselor. How hard was it for you to find a gender counselor?
Well, it was pretty difficult where I was living. So I ended up having to drive about an hour away to see a therapist who, her specialty wasn't really gender counseling, but she did have both interest and experience with LGBTQIA+ clients. And I could tell that she was both interested and open. And in the process of working with her, she was very supportive and helped me explore these things for myself. But I could also tell that she was learning as she went as well. So it was mutually beneficial. But even so, I had to drive an hour each way to visit her on a weekly basis. And fortunately, I was also going to school at the time in an area not too far away from there. So I was able to make the logistics work. But in those early days, also seeing a medical doctor that was knowledgeable with trans patients, knew how to prescribe and administer hormone therapy, that involved traveling to a different part of the state. And fortunately, I'm still able to see that doctor, and she's wonderful. But it was a 2.5-hour drive each way to go visit her. But it was well worth it. And I just learned to acclimate to a lot of driving at the time.
That goes right into my next question, is finding a medical doctor who can intelligently prescribe, like you said, hormone replacement therapy. Can you tell us a little bit about that process?
As with many things in trans communities, I learned of this doctor through word of mouth, through a couple other trans people I knew in the state, and through my therapist, finding basically lists and unofficial networks of doctors who had some specialty and knowledge. I was fortunate that I didn't have to see an endocrinologist, and I was able to find somebody who is, you know, a great fit for me personality-wise and just trust-wise. And so, yeah, a lot of that sort of thing was word of mouth. I got this person's name. Luckily, she was taking new patients at the time, and I managed to get in to see her. But, you know, it was still a process that involved some waiting. And it was, once I was ready for that stage of my transition, I was ready. And then having to wait for doctor's appointments, having to wait for prescriptions to fill, having to, you know, wait for all those things and the logistics, you know, was sometimes difficult.
Yeah, when they started putting you on the HRT, were there any discussions about the mental health side effects? Particularly, did your ADHD come in the conversation?
So I've had interactions with mental health professionals, counselors, psychologists from a relatively early age. In addition to ADHD, I also have OCD, which manifested pretty significantly around age 11 at the onset of adolescence and puberty. And at the time, that was the predominant struggle. But because I was having some problems with school and things, that they also assessed me for ADHD, but somebody somewhere along the line concluded that I didn't have it. It could very well be, this is just my speculation, but given my gender presentation at the time, and given that I was not fitting into the stereotype a lot of people had of ADHD in the 1990s, of hyperactive young boys who made a lot of trouble and couldn't sit still in class, that wasn't really me. I now understand that there can be a wider range of ADHD experiences that are often related to gender. And unsurprisingly, some of the forms that my ADHD takes tends to be that more seen in other girls and women, which was just not recognized at the time. This was early to mid 1990s. And so I think there was also just generally less known about different kinds of neurodivergence in general. Fast forward a while, you know, when I was in college, I started suspecting again that I had ADHD as I was trying to work on my studies, doing coursework in computer science. It was a lot of stuff to keep in your head all at once. And I did have trouble focusing. I did have trouble with working memory. But I also knew that somebody said I didn't have ADHD, so that must be true. It was confusing and difficult, but I made it work through sheer determination and brute force of a lot of time and effort. It wasn't until actually just within the last few years in my late 30s that I started learning more about the wider array of ADHD experiences and of different people's experiences with ADHD. And that really opened my eyes. And from there, I had some conversations with my doctor and ended up seeing a couple of other professionals for assessment. My first go at it was a relatively simple assessment of just having myself and some family members fill out worksheets and describing life history. And they came to a diagnosis of ADHD. And then subsequently, a couple of years later, actually earlier this spring, I ended up visiting with a neuropsychologist for a more thorough assessment, wherein I was diagnosed with both autism and ADHD. And it was really helpful to have that confirmed and opened up for me in terms of understanding myself. And in some ways, I'm still integrating this knowledge, but I've had a while to work with at least the ADHD component and work on life strategies and seek out some additional treatments. It has been a road to get here.
Oh, yeah, it sounds like it. I'm really interested about the autism piece too, because I know there's a lot of us who are either ADHD, mm-hmm. suspect they have autism, or the other way around. So how did that come about that they also screened you for autism? Was it just
no, it was specifically because I asked. Because in that initial ADHD, it explained a good number of my experiences, but I was still left with some lingering questions. Like this doesn't quite seem to fit. Or it really helped me to, again, learn from other people's firsthand lived experiences as shared on the internet, especially on places like Twitter. And as I heard people describing their experiences, especially people with both ADHD and autism, it sounded like they were describing my life. So I thought that, you know, there was probably something there. And I couldn't really shake the question until I sought some further answers. And I was very fortunate to actually find somebody who was able and, you know, competent to assess adults in my area. And even then, it was a drawn out process, and again, with waiting periods, but it was ultimately worth it in my case. I should mention too that as I was doing this learning, there was an inflection point at which I pretty much concluded for myself, yeah, this seems to be the case for me. This seems to be true for me. I still went through the rest of the kind of official assessment process as another data point to see what a professional might say. But I also know that I'm the greatest expert on my own experience. And I really believe that's the case for everybody. And that goes, you know, with gender as well. So I think that's an important point to underscore.
Something that's brought me comfort is just knowing that there is affordable private online therapy available anytime and anywhere through BetterHelp. And I've just found it to be way more convenient and way more in line with how I prefer to communicate. There's ways to communicate through email, through chat, through phone, whatever is easier for you. And listeners of the Adulting with ADHD podcast can save 10% off their first month today if they sign up. To take advantage of this deal, go to BetterHelp.com/ADHD adulting. That is BetterHelp.com/ADHD adulting.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. I think it's a great testament to all of these communities that a lot of the learning is happening within these communities. And a lot of us are coming to realize it, even if someone says you don't have something in the mid 90s, it's not gospel. That's kind of how I came up too. We're close in age and I, the same situation. And even as recent as last week, you get helping professionals that make assumptions about you or try to tell you your situation or diagnosis is inaccurate. And it feels good at this stage of the game to be able to say, I'm going to take that and just put it away. I know where I'm at and it's going to be okay. But I love that we have those different communities out there to be able to learn stuff like that. Because I definitely took doctor's word as gospel for probably the first 30 so years of my life, probably. So yeah. So we talked about ADHD and we talked about going on the hormone replacement therapy. Do you want to tell me a little bit about what it was like during the hormone replacement?
This is actually fresh in my mind because I've been talking with a friend of mine who recently started hormones as well. And it's an extraordinary experience that unfortunately is a little hard to describe. But the first thing that I can really say about it is that I felt grounded and present in my body almost immediately. And I'm sure some of that had a psychological basis. But as I've learned over the years, especially as I've had to change doses or temporarily go off a certain hormone and hormone-related medications, that some of that was a rather immediate effect of just feeling grounded in my body for really the first time in my life. And with that coming a sense of peace and stability that I really hadn't felt before. So that was the first key thing. And then with that came I would call it a settled happiness of knowing that this was the right fit for me. This was the right decision. Because of course, like with so many things with my own transition, and I think this is common for a lot of people, there was a lot of second guessing. I you know, had a lot of anxiety and a lot of uncertainty. And I kept telling myself, I will try this next thing and see how it goes. And I can reserve the right to change my mind and take a step back if I need to. But when I felt this, you know, just sense of connection with myself on the hormone therapy, I knew for certain that all of this, everything up to that point was right. And that my next steps of planning to come out and all the other scarier aspects of my transition, I felt like I had a better footing to start that from. And it was the beginning of gaining some self-confidence that I really needed. Initially, that's what that was like. And my doctor took a, you know, particularly measured approach with my hormones, starting at a very low dose and just slowly working our way up. That process continued as we increased doses as time went on. And of course, you know, within a few months, I started noticing, you know, some of the expected physical changes, but also noticing emotional changes. As somebody with ADHD, it's perhaps unsurprising that I've always had quite strong and sometimes difficult to regulate emotions throughout my childhood. And unfortunately, I taught myself a coping mechanism of disconnecting from them, which became somewhat impossible to reconnect after I went through puberty, after I was, you know, dealing with the wrong hormones. You know, not only did I have a distance from my emotions, I couldn't quite access them again. So when I went on hormone therapy and started having both more emotions, more nuanced emotions, a lot of that came flooding back out. And so there was some years of, I guess I'd call it emotional repression that coincided with this. And of course, changes in bodily hormones can itself lead to quite a bit of emotional variability. And really, it is accurate to describe this as a second puberty. And the same sorts of tumult that everybody associates with what I call first puberty in my mind, it's really a similar sort of thing. I had a lot of work cut out for me in terms of learning things about emotional regulation, learning things about my own self-care, learning things about how to communicate through and with emotions and emotionally with other people. And that's a process that's still ongoing. It's especially when living through stressful times, which there have been, you know, a number in the years since I've transitioned, that can bring up a lot of emotions. Yeah. And so I'm still feeling like learning and negotiating some things with emotions and relationships that a lot of other people do in their teenage years and in their 20s. And that's, I think, just a common part of trans experience too, because you really are in some ways restarting aspects of your life.
Yeah, absolutely. And what an interesting yes. time to be doing it right now. Oh, geez. Yeah. So this is going to be super, super helpful to our listeners. And so I'm thinking, do you have any parting advice or anything you want to add to that, that people can keep in mind as they're going, maybe they're about
sure. One thing I will say relating to both hormones and emotions is that I did notice there was also a relationship with what I identify as ADHD traits in myself. And although those were always present for me, they did become more noticeable in some ways in the years since I transitioned. And part of that may be aging and moving through different aspects of my life. But part of that is, I think, somewhere along the ways that, you know, your brain rewires itself to some degree, you know, through these hormonal changes. And I think that it brought some of these things more to the forefront. It, I think, did to some extent intensify some of my attention issues and complicate some of my related memory issues. And that was an unforeseen thing. But it wasn't just the hormones. It was suddenly I, in terms of personality, but also ADHD traits, I was starting to resemble more and more another woman in my family who, although undiagnosed, we are very similar in these ways. So she probably has ADHD as well. And I don't think that's a coincidence because I'm also starting to look more like her and to take on more of a resemblance. So I think there's just something in my genes are already in me that was just part of it. And I'm absolutely okay with that because although it certainly brings up its challenges from time to time, I feel authentically myself. I'm able to understand and embrace my ADHD. And I think that, I guess that leads into my advice is that even though there may be unforeseen things and even though it can be difficult at times, ultimately this process has absolutely been worth it for me, even with all of the extra complications that hormones and big emotions can involve. I feel like there is a piece there with hormonal changes and ADHD, but it still makes so much sense for me. And my life is so much better this way and having embraced that for myself. Another piece of advice too, it gets back to something I mentioned earlier about people being the greatest experts on their own experiences. And that's something I really want to drive home because for a long time in my second guessing myself, in my talking myself out of, oh no, I couldn't possibly have ADHD, I don't think I was listening enough to myself. And now I don't see that as my fault or anybody else's because we're put in positions to trust what certain authority figures say and do the best with the information that's given to us at the time. But really my advice to people is trust your gut. If something like thinking of ADHD experiences keeps coming up, you are having those experiences. You probably do. The most telling thing is, I think, listening to other people with those same experiences and seeing how much you relate. That's something that, you know, brought me both recognition and comfort. Listen to other people, listen to yourself. If somebody comes along and is contradicting you, know that that's just as likely because of misinformation or lack of certain experiences, and that in some cases, you definitely do know better of your own experiences than even somebody who is supposedly highly, trained in diagnosing or understanding these conditions. It's just a completely different thing to live it firsthand.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Before we go, did you have any resources as well that you might want to recommend? For example, if you wanted to find a provider through word of mouth, how do you meet other people?
In my case, it was a little bit of luck. I just happened to have some friends that I reconnected with from prior years who I learned transitioned and knew names of people in the area. Right. But you'll find word of mouth network in many places. And I think the best thing to do for people, especially relating to gender, but also I think this relates to things like ADHD and other neurodivergences, trying to find providers, is finding other people, if not in your area, at least in your state, who may have interfaced with these providers, who have some lived experience. And that's something you can do online through things like Twitter or Facebook groups, but also local organizations. There are some like local LGBT organizations here in Northeast Wisconsin who do provide some resource directories. And if nothing else, just reaching out to somebody and asking, is there additional information or somebody to contact or somebody who knows somebody, and just to get the ball rolling. And I've actually served in that role for people who are looking for resources. And I don't necessarily always have a lot to point their way in this area, but I can give them a name or two or an organization or two as their next steps. And so that's often how it goes, especially in places that aren't large urban areas. Now, if you are in a big city, you're probably fortunate to have more access to more providers and more community, things like official LGBTQ centers and other things. But even sometimes a local university campus can fill that role. For example, our local UW Green Bay has a Pride Center that does serve the broader community. So if people have questions or need resources, that's a place they can go and at least make some connections, meet a couple people, and start that ball rolling.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Anna. What are you up to these days? Are you playing
online? I'm mostly on Twitter. I'm at AstroCarry, @AstroCarri. I sometimes tweet about ADHD, neurodivergence, and sometimes about other things. I will often share just about my interests online. I'm into space exploration and technology, things like that. Yeah. As far as projects, not, in any official capacity. I work as an IT consultant here in Northeast Wisconsin. So that's most of what I do work-wise. My presence online tends to be more for social things, following my interests, but also making community with other trans people, other neurodivergent people. And I found Twitter to be an especially helpful place for that, with things like #ADHD or #AskADHD. I recommend people just go give those a look and see who's out there talking about these things, because that's been immensely helpful for me. Additionally, #ADHDAutism was especially eye-opening in my case. So just recommend people go explore, go learn, go connect.
Excellent. Excellent advice, Anna. Thank you very much.
Hey guys, I'm here to ask a little favor. So in order to grow the podcast even more, it's come to my attention that I should probably survey you guys to get a better idea of who's actually listening and what you guys want and what you don't want. If you could pretty please go to adultingwithadhd.com/survey, it would help me immensely to have this information, not just for myself as I'm creating content, but for any potential partners who may want to help grow the show. I would like to find people who are exactly right for you guys. Thank you very much, and until next time, happy adulting.
. 92% of households that start the year with Peloton are still active a year later.
92% because of a bike?
Not just bikes. We also make treadmills and rowers.
Oh, let me guess, for elite athletes only, right?
Nope. It doesn't matter if you're an avid exerciser or new to working out. Peloton can help you achieve your fitness goals. 92% stick with it. So can you. Try Peloton bikes, tread, or row risk-free with a 30-day home trial. New members only. Not available in remote locations. See additional terms at onepeloton.com/home-trial.